From NHPR, I'm Peter Biello, and this is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. The nation watched with horror this week as extremists who support President Trump stormed the Capitol, replacing American flags with Trump campaign flags and Confederate flags, breaking windows and furniture, and taking photos in seats reserved for lawmakers. Many were arrested, including at least one person from New Hampshire. The dust is still settling, but one thing is clear. We need to talk about this. Many questions remain, including, what are local Republicans saying about a president of their party who is being labeled an instigator? Why did these mostly white, mostly male protesters get so far into the Capitol while Black Lives Matter protesters last year were met with overwhelming force? And what consequences, if any, will the president and others face for fanning the flames of this aggression? We want to hear your reactions to Wednesday's attack. How do you think local New Hampshire Republicans should respond? Call us now. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. You can use Facebook, tweet us, or email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. One of our guests today, Dean Spiliotis. He's a civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. Hey, Dean.
Hi, Peter. It's good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. And also, for this part of the program, we've got Representative William Marsh, state representative, Republican representative from New Hampshire's 8th District. Representative Marsh, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to join you this morning.
So we're going to focus this first 20 minutes or so on the question of what should we be hearing from state Republicans, and we want to get your thoughts on that. Again, the phone number 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. I want to start this program today with a clip from the top-ranking Republican in the state, Governor Chris Sununu. Last night, he delivered an inaugural address by video, and he spent a great deal of time emphasizing the need for neighborliness. And here's what he said that seemed to pertain to the attack on the U.S. Capitol.
Look, when our side doesn't win, doesn't mean there's a conspiracy or the world's out to get us. It simply means we have to try harder next time. We must put forward better and more compelling arguments on that battlefield of ideas. And we mustn't let COVID or politics rob us of our passion for neighborliness. The consistent, cynical belief that an overwhelming public corruption at every turn, that results in a lasting damage to the public conscience as a whole. It tears at the fabric of the live free or die spirit. 2020 has unfortunately shown that there are individuals that take, frankly, a bit of pride out of such cynicism. Often, it's in that veil of technology and the unanimity of social media that gives this illusion of acceptance and the enthusiasm to criticize both action and ideas.
That's a clip from Governor Chris Sununu's inaugural address delivered last night. Dean Spiliotis, I'm not sure if you tuned in to listen to the whole speech. From what I can recall, that was as close as he came to directly addressing what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday.
Yes, I did have a chance to listen to the entire speech. And he also, at one point in the speech, talked about the need to avoid assigning cult-like status to some of our elected leaders. And I think that was certainly a not-so-veiled reference to the cult of personality that has developed around President Trump over the past 4 years among his core supporters. Yeah, the inaugural address last night was fascinating. It was a change in style and tone for Governor Sununu. As Josh Rogers noted last night, Governor Sununu tends to be a little bit more casual, a little bit more off the cuff. He likes to talk about being an engineer and a problem solver. But last night was a really interesting meditation on our live free or die motto, almost through a communitarian lens, talking about the idea that in order to fully enjoy our individual liberty to live free or die, you have to, part of that is your responsibility to your community and your neighbors. There were also some references in there to kind of the inefficiencies of big government. And I'm sure there's some aspects of the speech that Democrats can take issue with. But yeah, it was a very interesting speech and clearly referencing the events in Washington there.
And so I want to get your thoughts on it, too, Representative Marsh. What do you think? Should the governor have said more explicitly about what happened at the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday?
I think what the governor said was really quite appropriate. It's not his place to judge the federal government, but the other party officials have joined the governor in denouncing what happened. And I'll point people explicitly to what the New Hampshire House did. We passed a resolution condemning the violence in Washington, and Speaker Packard wrote in this week's House calendar that what we saw unfold on Wednesday was a barbaric assault on what our founding fathers had intended for our great nation. So I think we really need to understand that our founding fathers did not permit anarchy to take over our country. It was a real struggle in the time right after the revolution to stop that from happening. And we need to do the very same thing with the political violence that's arising in our country now.
Mm-hmm. And Representative Marsh, how did you feel as a Republican watching Wednesday's events unfold?
Well, I really couldn't watch them. You remember the House was in session. We were all sitting in our cars in a parking lot at UNH. So I would have been totally oblivious to what was happening as it was unfolding, except I was right near a young Representative DeShays, who's like most young people on his phone all the time. Mm-hmm. And he started telling us what was happening. I have to admit, I really didn't believe it. And after he kept pestering us about it, I then tuned in. 89.1 doesn't come in well at Durham, so I tuned into 90.1 on my radio because I could hear what was going on in the session over the speakers well enough, and it confirmed what was happening. And I was shocked. I was really shocked.
Mm-hmm. And did it disturb you that these people were identifying with the president of your party?
Well, people can identify with who they want to. It disturbed me more when I saw the clip of the president talking to them before the riots happened. That I found far more disturbing than the fact that there are some people who get unbalanced in their political views.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking in this part of the program with Republican State Representative William Marsh and civic scholar Dean Spiliotis. We want to hear from you on two things. What do you want to hear from state Republican leaders right now? And then in a little bit, we're going to be talking about the apparent difference between the way these mostly white pro-Trump extremists were treated by police on Wednesday and how law enforcement has responded to Black Lives Matter protests in the past year. Call us to join the conversation. Our number, 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange at nhpr.org. And let's talk to Michael in Portsmouth. Michael, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, thank you. I would like to address what I've seen as the political decline of the Republican Party since Newt Gingrich. This didn't happen in 4 years since Trump. This has been happening for 30 years. I'm 44, and before I could vote, I was seeing Republicanism lean more and more towards authoritarianism, towards sharp elbows, towards the lack of comedy. I think every Republican is responsible for what happened on the 6th. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael. Appreciate that. So we've got a Republican on the line here to respond to that. Michael says every Republican bears some responsibility for that. Representative Marsh, your thoughts?
Well, I don't think that I personally have any responsibility for what happened in Washington. I certainly didn't egg anybody on, and I would never encourage anybody to go riot. I very much believe in what our founding fathers did. I grew up in Western Pennsylvania, and one of the legacies of that was George Washington sending the troops in to put down the Whiskey Rebellion. And that was really the end of political violence in our country for quite some time. So I think that having a civilized government is important to Republicans. And what all the Republicans I've heard actually make statements very much it has condemned what happened in Washington.
Does what Michael said about authoritarianism and sharp elbows resonate with you? The kind of politics that at least national Republicans have been willing to engage in? Does that make sense to you?
My personal experience has not been that Republican politics is authoritarian, because if it was, I would be put under a lot more orders to do a lot more things than I have found myself to be under. So I would just disagree with his observation.
Dean Spiliotis, your thoughts?
It's interesting. I think Michael does raise an interesting historical point. There has been this almost insurgent strain in the Republican Party going back to Newt Gingrich. As some people will mention Sarah Palin in 2008. Similarly, the Tea Party in 2010. And, you know, you've seen over the last year and certainly over the course of the Trump administration, a number of Republicans who have identified as conservatives leave the party. The anti-Trump movement has been quite strong among some conservatives. You know, I was very concerned back at the last Republican convention over the summer, where there essentially was no Republican Party platform. They basically just decided that, you know, whatever President Trump wanted, that was going to be the Republican Party platform. I thought that was very concerning. So, you know, I think certainly the entire Republican Party is not authoritarian in nature, but there has been this move towards the Republicans supporting whatever the leader wants. And that certainly feels like a version of authoritarianism to me. And I think there are some deep divisions within the Republican Party that are going to continue. I think some of the individuals who maybe had kind of kept quiet or sort of stayed out of the line of fire from President Trump, I think are going to be emboldened now. So I do see the larger kind of historical trend that Michael is talking about, and it really leads most political scientists to argue that, you know, President Trump is really a kind of a symptom of our manifestation of these developments in the party over the last 20 to 30 years. Certainly has accelerated it, but we've been moving in this direction, I think, for quite some time now, and we have a politician in President Trump who figured out how to use social media to augment this kind of message within the party. And for me, it's driven a number of individuals out of the Republican Party who I kind of viewed as sort of core Republican conservatives. So that should tell you something.
Well, along those lines of divisions within the Republican Party, Representative Al Baldassaro, who's been a loyal supporter of the president since before the president was elected, he said the following on Twitter in the past few days. He said, "A sad day in America. POTUS, your election was stolen. Half the country knows it. The other half is blinded and wants big government rule. Maybe it's time to start up a third party. I have lost confidence in D.C. Republicans bowing down to mobs." So, Representative Marsh, what do you make of this discussion of a third party? Because in some ways, perhaps in a lot of ways, Trumpism and traditional conservatism do not align.
Well, I would agree that Trumpism and traditional conservatism really do not align. But the major need for a third party in our country right now may not be a traditional Republican party, but a party in the middle. I see just as much of a political divide in the Democratic Party. In fact, there's maybe more authoritarianism in the Democratic caucus in New Hampshire than in the Republican caucus in New Hampshire. They're far less tolerant of people who don't vote with the caucus than the Republican caucus is. And what's happened is both parties get forced to the extremes. And those of us who really believe that we're in the middle and just want to find rational solutions to problems and govern effectively can get cut out of the discussion. It's sad, actually. So I think that there may very well be a need for a new party in America, but I'm not sure that it needs to be an extreme party.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Anne in Bradford. Anne, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Very good discussion. Thanks for having me on. I talked to you earlier about my daughter and I saying it's stupid to fight. She voted for Bernie Sanders. I voted for Donald Trump. And yeah, there is going to be a third or fourth party forming, I believe. The Republicans and the Democrats have lost the people's will. I mean, when people have to storm the Capitol, there's something fundamentally wrong. I mean, having to scale walls and then being met with gunfire. I mean, I went to the state capitol. I'm 69 years old from the state I was from before I moved here. And I mean, I lived there for some time. I mean, we had rules we had to abide by, but we had access. That's the point. At the state capitals, you can have access to. Mm-hmm. Why is the federal all locked up and becoming a fortress, and then they don't listen when you call in? And now they're removing people like this guy, I guess, Holly. I mean, we have the right to free speech.
Well, thank you very much, Anne. And a couple of points there. First of all, no one has to climb the walls of the Capitol. The Capitol building is generally an open place where people can go. If you are bringing zip ties and automatic weapons and pipe bombs, that's a different story altogether. Second of all, Josh Hawley, Senator from Missouri, He was not silenced. He still has his Twitter account. The fact that his book contract was canceled has nothing to do with the First Amendment. But we take your point, and we see that there is, in fact, ways to get along. You said you're a Trump supporter, and your daughter had voted for Bernie Sanders. I take it from your comment that you still do talk to your daughter, and I think that's a great thing. Thank you very much for calling. Listeners, if you have a question or a comment, our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And let's talk to Rick from Amherst. Rick, thank you very much for calling.
Yes, my question is for Representative Marsh. If he does not believe that the Republican Party holds any responsibility for what happened on Wednesday, my question is, did he vote for President Trump? Did he support President Trump? And is he condemned President Trump for his actions on Wednesday?
Rick, thank you for your call. Representative Marsh.
Well, I believe that the secret ballot in New Hampshire and in the United States is there for a reason. So, no, I'm not going to tell you who I voted for or who I supported. If you want to look for pictures of what signs might have been at my house or my office when I owned it, you can do that. But that's a different question. Mm-hmm. As far as condemning President Trump for what he did, I have to admit I have not had the time to look at all the facts, but people that I respect very much, and here I'll quote from Governor Chris Christie. I think Governor Chris Christie had a very good point when he said that he blamed President Trump for inciting these riots. He said they were acting out because they've been lied to consistently by the president about a fraudulent election. And he was totally sickened by what he saw happen. And I think that is a fair judgment on what happened in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday.
We get this note from Susan, who says, for the past 2 years, I have noted in New Hampshire that a great number of bills passed in our state house with bipartisan support. Then Governor Sununu vetoed a large number of those bills. And when veto override day drew near, he gathered all the Republican reps and made it clear that they were not to override his veto. And they obeyed. That I should add, was for the most part, they obeyed. Is that not authoritarianism right here in New Hampshire, is the question from Susan. I'll put that to Dean Spiliotis. Dean, what do you make of Susan's comments?
You know, there has been a lot of discussion, you know, over the last year or so, the record number of vetoes by Governor Sununu. You know, a chief executive cajoling his party members to sustain his veto. You know, a number of those state legislators probably voted to sustain the veto in their own right. I don't necessarily view that as authoritarianism per se. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see now with Governor Sununu having unified control of the state legislature, and given some of the divisions in the Republican Party in the state and some of the criticism that Governor Sununu has received for the exercise of emergency powers during the pandemic. It's going to be a slightly different political environment. But, you know, a chief executive trying to maintain party unity in his caucus isn't necessarily the same thing as authoritarianism. I mean, vetoes and the ability to veto override are built into our system.
And so we get this email from Scott, who says, either you're an American believing in democracy or you are something else. Condemning the violence in Washington falls far short of what is needed right now for every elected leader in America. We all know why people rioted. If the Republican Party cannot remove this president immediately, the party is lost. I, for one, will never vote for anyone who is so cowardly they cannot reach such low bar of morality. That's the note from Scott. Thanks very much, Scott. Appreciate your note. If anybody has a question or a comment, our number, 1-800-892-6477. You can also email exchange at nhpr.org. Last night, Governor Sununu spoke in his inaugural address about unity, about neighborliness, about looking within ourselves to make the change that we want to see in the world. Representative Marsh, how does that translate politically for this upcoming session when Republicans will be in control of the New Hampshire House, the New Hampshire Senate, and the governorship? Is there a space for Republicans to extend a neighborly hand to Democrats and work together?
Well, yes, I think there very much is. In fact, I happen to be aware that there's a caucus forming of moderates from both parties, and I'm hoping that we will continue to have a dialogue. I personally have been involved with a number of bills that were not bipartisan just by having a single person from the other party on the bill, but were actually jointly drafted and equally supported by members of both parties. So there's an awful lot that we do that we can accomplish working together, and I hope we will be able to continue to get that done.
Well, Representative William Marsh, Republican representing several towns in Carroll County, thank you very much for being on the program today. We really appreciate your time.
It's been a pleasure.
And Dean Spiliotis, before we head into a break, I do want to ask you one more question about the governor and his third term and the potential pitfalls he might be facing. What do you think those are?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, if you look at the certainly at the presidential level, if you look at the history of chief executives who have had unified government, that is control of their of the legislature or Congress, they often run into real problems. When one party controls all the levers of government, you often get a lot of internal fissures that develop within the party because different corners of the party feel like they now have a green light to push different aspects of the legislative agenda. So that's going to be a challenge for him. He's, you know, Governor Sununu has been much more vocal and visible on the national level. He's been on cable news a lot lately, talking about the federal response to the pandemic. He's received some criticism from parts of his party for the exercise of these emergency powers. So it's fascinating to me, you know, chief executives, whether they're presidents or governors, always hope for unified government so they can get something done. And then the reality turns out to be something a lot more complicated, and it's often gone within 2 years.
Politics, more complicated than you think. Let's talk to John in Alton. John, thank you very much for calling.
Oh, thank you for putting me on. I have a number of thoughts I'd like to offer. Both of my parents were staunch Republicans for many years. My father was a war hero from World War II, and he would be absolutely sick over what's been going on. I was a Republican up until 4 years ago, and I made a terrible mistake. I voted for Donald Trump. And I would like to apologize to the nation for my mistake.
Well, John, I appreciate your thoughts. Our time is short. I have to let you go there, but I appreciate you calling in and sharing your insights with us. Listeners, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to tackle another of the important questions that we laid out at the outset, which is, why did these mostly white, mostly male protesters get so far into the U.S. Capitol while Black Lives Matter protesters earlier this year were met with overwhelming force? It's a complicated story, but we're hoping to start telling it after a break. Give us a call and be part of this. Our number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send us an email. Our address is exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. We'll be right back.
As a small business, we have always prioritized our underwriting for NHPR as one of the primary marketing investments that we make.
Jim Fitz, Managing Director of the Colony Group, a longtime business supporter of NHPR.
We find that our clients appreciate that support, and also we frequently hear that NHPR is where they first hear our name.
You can learn more on how to reach NHPR's statewide audience at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you so much for tuning in. And tune in on Monday on The Exchange when we'll have a reporter roundtable where we will preview the upcoming legislative session and discuss the issues lawmakers will be examining in the coming months. Send your questions and comments about the upcoming session to us by email. Our address is exchange@nhpr.org. Right now, we're discussing Wednesday's storming of the U.S. Capitol by pro-Trump extremists and how police response to the mob differed from law enforcement responses to Black Lives Matter protests last summer. And we want to hear from you on this. What do you think about the police response to Wednesday's attack? Call us now, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange@nhpr.org. Our guest for the full hour, Dean Spiliotis. He's civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. And joining us now is Asma El-Uhouni. She's the New Hampshire Movement Politics Director at Rights and Democracy NH. Asma, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
We know this is a difficult subject. I wanted to check in with you and ask you how you're feeling today.
Well, yeah, thank you, first of all, for having me on. I really do appreciate it. I'm overwhelmed. I'm tired, but I am not surprised. So that's how I'm feeling.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. What were your initial reactions and feelings when you heard about the insurrection that was taking place?
My initial feelings was like, wow, okay, this is white supremacy, basically sticking a middle finger in our faces, right? That was my initial reaction. And then I got to hear from some people who were comparing it to the rallies that we've had. And so I kind of just really want to make it clear here that, you know, social movements are motivated by love and hope and inclusion. And when we rally for healthcare for all, against family separation, for racial justice, to end violence perpetrated by both the state and individual actors. And what we saw on Wednesday was not a social movement. What we saw was a movement indeed, but it was not a social justice movement. We saw a movement motivated by hate, by racism, by fascism, by a president who moments before spoke to the same crowd and said they must show strength and resistance by marching to the Capitol. And that's exactly what they did. They followed their leader. And in the middle of their actions, he tells them he loves them and that they're very special. And I think it's important to state that Sununu, Governor Sununu, and every Republican who has publicly stated they supported Trump and did not condemn or talk against Trump's accusations that the elections were stolen are just as complicit and guilty as Trump and his rioting terrorists. And by the way, it's not lost on us that, you know, the silence of Governor Sununu, a man who's publicly said he supported, you know, Trump, stays silent when a man he supports, incites violence. How do we stand by someone like that? How can New Hampshire accept a governor whose actions or inactions speak loud and clear that he supports and continues to support Trump and his violent followers?
I wanted to bring in this comment from Amy, who seems to be of one mind with you, Asma. She writes, "We have witnessed increasing openness to Nazis, white supremacism, and other hate groups throughout the last 4 years. This week, I saw a Confederate flag inside the Capitol and people wearing shirts saying Camp Auschwitz and being told by the U.S. president that he loved them. If you can remain aligned with that party, you are morally bankrupt." That's the comment from Amy, Asma.
That is absolutely correct. These are people who are rioting against democracy while we are trying to instill a democracy. And look, the bottom line is we have two very separate realities in America. We have a reality where innocent people who've done nothing but exist as a brown and black person are stopped, are surveillanced, are detained, are deported just for existing, right? Doing nothing wrong. And then another reality where people can storm the Capitol, right? Literally what some people say is the most powerful institution in our country and get a slap on the wrist and not even get arrested, right? While people get killed for driving, for jogging, for sleeping in their own beds while being black or brown. So a totally different reality in this country for people. And yeah.
Let's go to the phones and take a call from Gary in Randolph. Gary, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I guess, in my mind, words matter. I was just recently listening to Fox News, and Senator Tom Cotton was on there, and this was yesterday morning. And he was asked the question as to what the Republicans were going to do now that the Democrats had the White House, the U.S. Congress, and the U.S. Senate. And I didn't catch all of it, but one of the statements that he made was, we need to stop the radical agenda of the Democrats. And I have even heard the governor use words that denigrate the Democrats, talking about socialism and this kind of thing. And this is where words matter. And every Republican needs to take half a step back and think about how they talk about the other side. Because when you talk about the other side as the enemy, they're going to destroy our government, they're going to destroy our country, it gives license to what happened yesterday in Washington, D.C. It makes a huge division in our country, and it's part of what's been going on for years now within the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. They've become more radicalized, and it's a them versus us attitude, which just leads again to what happened in D.C.
And Gary, to what extent do you think harmful rhetoric is also coming from the Democratic side?
Well, you know, I try and listen to both sides. If Dean Spiliotis can give me an example of where the Democrats have called Republicans made a statement that if you vote Republican, you're going to destroy this country, or you're going to destroy the state, then I will say both sides do it. You know, I listen to I'm an independent, and I try and listen to all sides. And when I listen to Fox News, the rhetoric that comes from Fox News in particular is hateful, divisive. You know, the word of socialism. You know, socialism paves our roads. Socialism is the fire department that shows up when you need them. Socialism is the police. Socialism is when you drive over a bridge, it doesn't collapse.
Gary, we see your point. Thank you very much for making it. And it seemed like a challenge to you, Dean Spiliotis. So what do you think?
A couple things that I want to comment on, given what Gary just said. You know, Tom Cotton is a very, very interesting case. He's someone who certainly harbors presidential ambitions. A lot of us expected that he would be out front with Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz in challenging the results of the election, but he hung back a little bit, actually. And gave a fairly straightforward speech about the Constitution for his 5 minutes when he was allowed to speak. But that said, you know, he's been a tremendous critic of Democrats. So, you know, we also heard, if you watch the House debate, Mo Brooks from Alabama, ranting about the Democrats and socialism, et cetera. I mean, this kind of inflammatory rhetoric, the polarization between the parties, the impact of social media as basically everyone existing in these kind of hermetically sealed information ecosystems and feverishly working to filter out anything that doesn't agree with their pre-held beliefs is very problematic. You spend, you know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners, and Peter, I know you probably have as well, spent time on Twitter, reading some of the rhetoric on both sides. But the issue right now is that the president, who's a Republican, essentially incited this riotous behavior in the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And it's going to really up to Republicans to step. I mean, Democrats have been remarkably critical all along for 4 years.
Well, let me pause you there, Dean Spiliotis.
For his removal, yeah.
Let me just pause you there, because I do want to turn back to Asma Elhuni for a moment and ask, because we're honing in specifically on the policing and the differences there. And Asma, could you tell us a little bit more detail about your experience visiting Congress and protesting?
Oh. Yeah, sure. I was asked to attend the first inaugural speech by Trump to address Congress. And that was, I believe, in the year, when he became president. And what was really interesting is they've all done their homework, just as the security has done their homework. They knew people are rallying. They knew there was going to be a protest, right? Just like they knew I was going to be in Congress, invited in to listen in on Trump address Congress. And what I thought was really interesting is when I walked in, there was heavy security. And then I was followed by a person in normal clothes into the elevator. And then he said, "Hey, are you going to interrupt the president's speech?" And so all that to say is I really have a hard time understanding how on earth do protesters in a very extremely heavily protected security building like the Capitol allow what happened to happen, right? And so really, this is really holding a mirror up to our nation and clearly saying there is a double standard that cannot be denied. And I want to make it clear, we're not here saying that police should have been violent or should have shot demonstrators. That's not the point we're making. In fact, more lives would have been, you know, lost if that happened. But the point that we're making is there is a double standard in this country. And it's not only with law enforcement, but it's with housing, it's with healthcare, it's with education, it's with access. And this country needs to address this. It's not going away. We want a government that works for us. So give us, you know, if Republicans really want to get together and want this country to be better, all right, let's get together with the Democrats. Let's give us our $2,000 checks. Let's make healthcare work for all. Give us a government that works for the people.
We get this email from Geraldine who says, I am furious to keep hearing the question, why the different response to peaceful protesters and armed white men? Racism, systemic racism. Secondly, it's pathetic that the cabinet members are resigning now in order to avoid voting on the 25th Amendment, despicable people. Geraldine referring to Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao and Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos recently resigning their posts. Some say, as Geraldine is saying, to avoid having to make a decision on whether or not the president is fit to remain in office under the 25th Amendment. Asma Elhuni, I spoke with Representative Annie Custer on Wednesday while she was in lockdown, and I asked her about what we're talking about now, this racial component to the police response. And here's what she had to say in that moment.
I myself am focused on getting us peacefully to the transition. I think they've come from all over the country. They're not city people, if you will. And, you know, they have a different perspective, and they, I think, to use that term, inciting violence, they have been whipped up to a frenzy. And I think this was a big moment for them to demonstrate their strength.
And so, Asma Elhuni, we saw them demonstrate their strength, but still Congress prevailed in doing what it set out to do. But it was an extraordinary display, and all of us were following it in some way or another, it seems.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, honestly, I don't know what to say. And let's not forget that we've had people from New Hampshire present at that protest, and sadly, a police chief. The police chief of Troy, New Hampshire, right? He was present at the protest. So, yeah, what do you say about that?
Right.
You know?
Well, we're definitely going to talk a little bit more about the police chief in Troy in the next part of the program. I wanted to ask you something about my impression of the social media response to what happened yesterday. As it was happening, lots of people were saying things that you are saying right now, which is that the police response was comparatively easygoing to what we had seen previously to Black Lives Matter. And I was wondering, would people have been so quick to pick up on that had we not had this great rise in the consciousness of what's happening to people of color in this country? In other words, has there been progress in awareness of what's happening since last May, for example?
I sure hope so. But I don't see that happening. It's one thing to say something. It's one thing to say that, yes, we support Black lives. Yes, we shouldn't be targeting brown and Black people. And it's another when there's nothing that follows those statements, right? If you really, truly support Black lives, if you really, truly support people of color and that we need to get rid of racism or dismantle it, then it needs to be followed by actions. And where are the policies that ensures that we're not targeting brown and Black folks? And that's what we wanna see, and that's what we're not seeing. And instead we are seeing people, and including in New Hampshire, who are here defending police officers. So we definitely need to change that culture and stop relying particularly on a security apparatus, which oftentimes targets brown and Black folks. So they need to walk the talk is basically what I'm saying. It's not enough to verbally say you support this dismantlement of racism and that what we are living through is white supremacy. Even though it's not in hoods, it is very much white supremacy.
Well, let's go to the phones. And listeners, if you have a thought, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And let's talk to Grace in Manchester. Grace, thank you very much for calling.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show. I just wanted to reiterate what Asma was saying and to really emphasize the fact that right now what we're seeing is a defection. You know, we're seeing that from Republican lawmakers, those who are and Republican cabinet members who are resigning and starting to, like, the ball is rolling where people are starting to say, like, oh, you know what, this is the line that we will not cross. But history has shown us time and time again that a coup does not need to succeed the first time. time for it to be successful. And the reality is that this country has not dealt with its racist history, has not dealt with the systemic injustices and racism that underpin our law enforcement, that underpin our other systems like education, as well as access to resources, which we have been clearly feeling during the COVID-19 pandemic. And what we're seeing is that unless, and I agree with Asma, unless there are real changes, unless there are real consequences and accountability to what to the events that have happened, not only in the last few days, but over the last 4 years, over the last 100, 200, 400 years, true reparations and true healing for this country. We can't even begin to talk about organizing across the aisle and talking about unity and talking about going back and saying that this country isn't exactly what it is and has been for many of the Black and Brown people who have lived here. And so I think it is really important for us to see this moment for what it is, that, you know, there is a desire to quickly erase what is happening, to blame it on bad agents or bad actors, or to say that this is not us. But that, I think, is a very narrow and myopic view of who we truly are as a country. And this is what our, you know, our Black mm-hmm. and Brown brothers and sisters and siblings have been telling us for generations.
Well, Grace, thank you very much for the call. With respect to policy ideas, Asma, what should happen at the federal level now? Because as of January 20th, Democrats are going to control the White House and Congress. Should Democrats work with Republicans, or should they just ram through as many policy priorities as they can while they are in power? What do you think?
I think that what we need is a government that works for the people. And what needs to happen is Republicans need to get on board with a government that works for the people and work for the people and not corporations. That's exactly what needs to happen. And we need bold changes. We can no longer continue to live the way we're living. 350,000 people dead is not okay. If Republicans decide that they are ready for a government that works for the people, that's awesome. But if not, our Democratic leaders need to do what they need to do to protect and to serve the people of this country.
Asma Helhouni is the New Hampshire Movement Politics Director at Rights and Democracy New Hampshire. Thank you very much for speaking with me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And we've still got Dean Spiliotis from SNHU with us. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk all about consequences. What should the consequences be for the president and possibly others for fanning the flames of the aggression that manifested in the storming of the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday? There's talk of the 25th Amendment being evoked. There's talk of another impeachment vote. What should it be, in your opinion? Who bears the most responsibility, and how should they be held accountable? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or email us. Our address is exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello. This is The Roundup. We'll be right back.
As a small business, we really like to support the community around us, and we feel that NHPR is a very important part of New Hampshire's community.
Lydia West of Goose Bay Lumber of Chichester is a proud NHPR underwriter.
Goose Bay is a really small business with very limited advertising dollars, but with NHPR, not only do we reach our customer base, it feels good to be able to support NHPR.
Join NHPR's growing community of underwriters at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're reacting to Wednesday's insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Right now, we are exploring what sort of repercussions might exist for President Trump, who encouraged his supporters to walk down to the Capitol in his Save America rally. What do you think? Should Trump face consequences for what happened? And what are those consequences? Call us now, 1-800-892-6477. You can also email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Our guest, Dean Spiliotis. He's a civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. Dean, thank you very much for sticking with us this whole hour. Really appreciate it.
Sure thing, Peter.
So, Dean, we've been hearing a lot about what sort of repercussions Trump might face for what some are saying are seditious acts. Some say he was inciting violence. What sort of possibilities do you know of for certain consequences?
Sure, there are a whole range of possibilities, depending on what members of Congress want to do. We've heard some discussion of the 25th Amendment, where you can remove a president who is no longer fit to carry out the duties of the office. That would have to be initiated by Vice President Pence and a majority of the cabinet. President Trump could then object, and it would go to Congress, and you would need a two-thirds vote in both houses to remove him from office. Yesterday, apparently, Speaker Pelosi and Minority Leader Schumer in the Senate tried to talk with Vice President Pence about the 25th Amendment, and he wouldn't take their call. There doesn't seem to be a willingness to do that right now in the vice president. You know, the other alternative we're hearing about now is there in theory might be an impeachment vote in the House sometime in the next week. President Trump would still get to have a trial of some sort. Part of the problem is that Congress is out of session until the inauguration, but there are some parliamentary maneuvers that could be taken to move that up. So those are two possibilities. You know, I will say, just as in general, I think that this episode, you know, really has, if President Trump had any intention of running for re-election or maintaining a vice grip on the party, I mean, I think he's done incalculable damage to that particular possibility. I mean, I basically think he's done after this, and I think a number of elected officials in Congress on the Republican side would agree with that. There's also the issue of pardons and whether or not he or any members of his family or his inner circle, his personal lawyer Rudy Giuliani, who was asking for the folks in Washington to engage in combat. He literally used the word combat. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of legal repercussions once he's out of office. And, you know, we'll see if President Trump tries to issue himself a preemptive pardon, which I assume that the DOJ, the DOJ under Joe Biden would challenge.
The question of pardons is certainly really, really tricky. And there are many, many details to suss out on that. I do want to take some calls here and bring people into the conversation. So let's talk to Rose in Manchester. Thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. He should be impeached. We can't let this go by. He had his people. He incited his followers to attack the capital of the United States of America. This can't be let go because it sets a precedent for future people to do this to the United States and even the states.
Yeah, well, Rose, thank you very much. I take your point. Should be impeached because it sends a message. And that might be all that is possible, right, Dean Spiliotis, in part because impeachment and then conviction takes a lot longer than 2 weeks, and Trump's going to be out of office on January 20th anyway.
Yeah, and it's not clear to me that even after all of this, although I've heard some discussion that things may have changed, but it's not clear to me that you could get 67 members of the Senate to remove him. That would require, you know, a significant number of Republicans to sign on. You know, President Trump a long time ago said that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it. And, you know, this whole episode is almost kind of a metaphorical version of that. And I think people are waiting to see what, if any, consequences there will be for him. I mean, he was impeached, but he was not removed from office. Impeaching him a second time, well, yeah, I mean, that would send a signal, but the likelihood that he would be removed again, I think that would be very difficult to pull off. My sense at this point is that Republicans have just kind of want to run out the clock on this. And move on. And as I said, I think he's done incalculable damage to his political future, if in fact he wanted one. And getting back to some of our earlier discussion, the question is going to be whether or not Trump's time in office served as a platform for further movement in this kind of direction, or whether, as he kind of recedes a little bit from center stage, whether we're going to get back to more typical politics. I don't know the answer to that, but that's one of the things I'm watching.
We get an email from a listener who says, we must remove Trump by whatever means we have available to us. If we do not, we're sending the right message to the 70 million people that still support him. I fear that if we do not take him out once and for all and put a period on it, we will see him resurface in 2024. Dean, I'm trying to square two comments you made recently. You said, you know, and Trump said it himself, that he thinks he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and not get in trouble. But then you're also saying that, you know, he's falling out of favor and he doesn't have the kind of support that he has. I mean, his supporters will support him thick and through thick and thin. Are they going anywhere?
I think some are. If you kind of monitored social media yesterday, there were a number of supporters who were very upset with his most recent statement. You know, you probably got whiplash if you watched the two statements that he made back to back. The first one saying that the rioters were special and he loved them and that he was robbed and the election was rigged. And then 24 hours, likely, as reporting suggests, like 24 hours later, likely for legal culpability reasons, he made that second scripted speech where he said that it was despicable and that people should be punished, et cetera. You know, you can see his instinct for self-preservation kicking in. You know, whether or not he's formally sanctioned by Congress, I do think that even though there's always going to be a core of support for him, I think it's going to be smaller. The question is what kind of control he'll have on the Republican Party. But in terms of ever being president again, I don't see, you know, the circumstances under which he would actually become president again, I think are hard to fathom at this point. I mean, the one final thing I'll say on this is, and sure, this gets back to earlier in the show, Gary's comment about Democrats and Republicans and, you know, which side is more culpable. You know, I've been covering politics here in the state for over 25 years, and the impact of social media on politics here and nationally has just been just stunning. And until we can kind of break out of these silos and these hermetically sealed information ecosystems, both on the left and the right, it's going to be hard to get anything done. And, you know, and you asked Asma about whether or not, you know, Democrats should ram through a program or try to work across the aisle. The problem is, you know, you're going to have a 50-50 Senate, and Vice President Harris will be able to break ties. But you still have a filibuster on legislation in the Senate. And unless that filibuster is removed in the way that it was removed for Senate confirmations for judges, justices, and cabinet officials, people in the Senate, people like Joe Manchin and Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and others, Mitt Romney, they're going to have a lot of sway. So I think it's Biden's, it will be President Biden's inclination to try to work the middle, if at all possible. And you're going to see continued fissures, mm-hmm, within the Democratic Party between progressives and moderates precisely over this issue of how quickly to move on the agenda. But, you know, I think you're seeing in the wake of this some attempt to kind of cool down the incendiary rhetoric everywhere. I don't know how feasible it is until there's some changes in the way social media functions.
Well, NHPR is going to continue to follow, you know, how and whether impeachment may happen. So stay tuned to NHPR for that. On the matter of consequences for others who participated, Troy Police Chief David Ellis says he attended the rally but was not part of the mob that ransacked the Capitol. The chair of Troy's select board is standing by the town's police chief. Richard Thaxton called Ellis an honest public servant who should not be fired for attending the rally before it turned violent. Here's what he said.
I believe that any individual, any public servant, has the right to participate in political events without fear of loss of employment.
Ellis said he left Washington shortly after the scene at the Capitol escalated, and he's quarantining at his home in accordance with the state's policy on traveling outside of New England. He's doing so using vacation time. Dean, wanted to ask you about that because there are some professions that, you know, require public trust, and sometimes political associations diminish that trust. What do you make of the comments made there?
I mean, that certainly is always a concern if you see politics seeping into the functioning and operating of an office that's being held in the public trust. Certainly, all Americans have a right to stake out their personal lives and to protest and exercise free speech. I think the decisive factor for prosecuting rioters is going to be, again, social media. It was remarkable to me, if you watch the scenes of the Capitol being breached, the extent to which the whole thing was a giant social media photo opportunity for a lot of these folks. They seemed almost more eager to, blend this into their social media feeds than to actually exercise some sort of, insurrection actions. And so I think it's very, there were people who were bragging about breaking into the Speaker Pelosi's office, or you had people posing for pictures on the floor of the U.S. Senate, which was just a remarkable thing to see. And so I think, a lot of those folks are being identified. I think they're going to be prosecuted under federal statutes. I think, in theory, President Trump could pardon them. I think that would be a very perilous thing to do. But as far as people being down there for a rally, I think that's their right to do that. But anybody who's sort of seen in and around the Capitol when all that was going down, I think they're absolutely open to criminal prosecution.
Well, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar from SNHU, we really appreciate your time today. Thanks for your insights.
Sure thing, Peter. My pleasure.
I want to close on a few comments that folks have sent in to us. An email from Lynn says, Trump has fallen low, low. He incited violence against our Capitol building and our working reps and senators, doing the people's work. He must not remain in office, not 9, 10, 11, 12 days more. He needs to be responsible for what he did and take punishment that Pence and cabinet members can do with the 25th Amendment. He should not be able to pardon yet more miscreants he favors. We also got a note from Leanne who says, remove him immediately. He is a safety risk, not just to our country, but to the world. Anything can happen in the time frame of 1 minute. He needs to be taken out of office immediately. And finally, email from Mark. Why hasn't negligent homicide been put on the plate? Trump rhetoric has incited a mob to riot and has resulted in 5 absolutely senseless deaths. Thank you, Mark, for your comment. Thanks, Leanne. Thanks to everyone who lended their voices to making the show what it was today. We really appreciate it. The conversation is going to continue on our Facebook page. Just search for NHPR Exchange. You could also tweet us at NHPR Exchange or NHPR or at me, Peter Biello. And that's our show. The show is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Today's show is produced by Jane Vaughn. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our executive producer is Michael Brindley. Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips also produced the show. And our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.